Hello and welcome to Sports Report Podcast, episode 36. I'm Billy, and today we got a lot of stuff to talk about. We haven't been recording in, I think, a month, actually. We've been on a little bit of a break. Alejandro and Aiden aren't with me today, but I got you covered today. We've missed a lot of stuff. Free agency, pretty much we're about 2 weeks into it, so we're going to get into a recap of all of that and what's happened, some of the trades, the NFL draft rumors that have transpired over the past few weeks. Also, we got the NBA trade deadline that just happened, and just a lot of stuff overall happening. So first, let's get into the New England Patriots and what they did during the free agency, which was crazy. I mean, as soon as the legal tampering period opened, Bill Belichick did something that he's never really done before, and that's go out and he spend a ton of money. He's always been very conservative with his spending habits, and I mean, it's understandable. Patriots were always kind of on a budget, and he always goes for those players that are cheap and can win games and are reliable, those type of guys. But after coming off a 7-9 season with Cam Newton under center, barely going over 100 yards a game most of the time, and just really struggling, it's understandable that the Patriots would want to go in a different direction. Robert Kraft just a few days ago said that they're having new approaches to free agency because the drafting problems that have happened over the past 5 or so years, maybe in 10 plus. I mean, you got guys like Cyrus Jones coming in here, Duke Dawson, N'Keal Harry, the most recent example that has been an absolute failure. Sony Michel, you could put into that category, although I'd argue Super Bowl 53. I mean, Sony Michel was a very key part of that offense, ultimately through that whole entire playoff period and everything. Sony Michel was just very good, but that was 1 year. And then after that, steadily fell off, and you saw Damien Harris come in last year and pretty much be the heart and soul of the offense by the end of the season. So, and also Isaiah Wynn with his injury problems and all that. Other names, Malcolm Brown, who was consistent, still kind of consistent, but never really lived up to his first round value. Derek Rivers, who I think was a second, third round pick. That was one of the years where Deflategate and I think the Brandon Cooks trade hit him really hard, and they had to take him out of like Youngstown State or something. He didn't work out. But obviously, the Patriots have had a lot of drafting struggles early on in the early rounds of the draft these past few years. So Kraft basically gave Belichick the go-ahead to spend $200 million-plus dollars. I mean, they had the cap space too, which they haven't had in a while. But $200-plus million for Belichick to go out and spend, and he spent it immediately using his connections with Drew Rosenhaus. And really breaking the myth that guys like Rex Ryan tried to promote on ESPN, that players only wanted to play for the Patriots because of Tom Brady, which is a complete myth. Bill Belichick still showing that, you know, even the money, of course, is a factor, but Belichick showing that he still has value to players out there, and players want to play for the Patriots. They recognize, I mean, a guy who wins 6 Super Bowls, you can't have him have one bad season. That's not even that bad. I mean, for the Patriots standard, bad, but like that's an average season. A team that has good money and good coaching, I mean, the guy won 6 Super Bowls. There's no world where a guy who's won 6 Super Bowls, 8 if you want to include the assistant coaching, defensive coordinators with the Giants and all that, won that many Super Bowls. There's no way after one bad season that players don't want to play for him. The guy's a defensive genius, and I think a lot of players recognize that wholeheartedly. And you got guys coming in. I mean, the first signing of the day for the Patriots and free agency was Jonnu Smith, the tight end from the Tennessee Titans. Overall beast, red zone threat, just really, really big tight end, very athletic, can get up and down the field very easily for a guy of his size. Jump ball type guy, which is something that if they're going to stick with Cam Newton, is a key thing for them, because Newton in the red zone, they'd always rely on his legs, and he couldn't, they never trusted him to throw in the red zone. But now you got Smith on a 4-year, $50 million deal. Pretty good, about the tight end value. You got him coming in and kind of that jump ball guy in the red zone, which is just what Cam needs because of his somewhat inaccurate throwing. And, you know, with him in Carolina, he had Greg Olsen for that. Last year, he really didn't have a tight end. Now he does have that if they want to move forward with Cam. And Jonnu's one of the best in the league for that. And also after the catch, Belichick, a few years back when they were facing the Titans, said that Jonnu Smith, to him, was one of the best, I believe, receivers of any kind, tight end and wide receiver, just a ball catcher in general, after the run was one of the best, after the catch on the run, was one of the best in the league. And I tend to agree with that point. I mean, Jonnu just breaking tackles, just very good in open space, athletic freak, as we know. And I think in the Belichick system that has, when you have good talent at the tight end position, he pushes it forward to extreme heights with guys like, I mean, Gronkowski, Hernandez, before guys like Ben Watson back in the day. I mean, he brings the best out of his tight ends generally, Martellus Bennett, until these last few years where he really got nothing that was of note and of value for him to use. And then the next day, we're skipping a few signings just to stay in this tight end group. He went out and got Hunter Henry, who was pretty much the universally accepted best tight end in this class, on a 3-year, $37.5 million deal. Henry, injury problems, but one of the best tight ends of the league, probably top five tight end. Jonnu is in that conversation as well. I think that he can progress over to that point. And, you know, there's a lot of good tight ends in this league, but I think Henry is secure in that top five when he's healthy. With injury problems, only the only wrong thing about him. I mean, great target for Phillip Rivers through the years and Justin Herbert last year at Arkansas. He was an animal. Belichick has been following Hunter Henry since his high school days and really has just appreciated his game. And I think it's awesome that they went out and spent this much on the tight end position. They got the two best tight ends in free agency without a doubt. Without a doubt. The only other tight end that I think could compete for that is maybe Jared Cook or Gerald Everett. Everett was pretty much the backup. I wouldn't say backup, but more of the side piece to Tyler Higbee with the Rams. So he was never really a number one like Henry or Smith are, and that kind of difference maker. Whereas Jared Cook, very good tight end for the Saints, has been very good for when he played for the Packers. Just really his whole entire career. Titans, Rams, I believe. Just very good tight end overall, but older guy. I wouldn't say declining, but bound to decline is Jared Cook. But you got Henry and Smith, who are both very young, in their 20s still. You know, good contracts here to get them in. You're bringing back not to the level that Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski were back 2011, 2012. Not to that level, obviously, because those two tight ends before Hernandez went bad were generational talents. Generational talents. Gronkowski, best tight end of all time. Possibly Tony Gonzalez, Kellen Winslow. Guys like that still in that conversation. I tend to think Gronkowski, when it's all said and done, will be the best, known as the best tight end of all time. Gonzalez is very close, though. They're very, very close together. Hernandez, if he wasn't a horrible person and killed people, by the end of his career, probably would have been a Hall of Famer as well. I mean, he was on track for an amazing career. We're not talking about that with Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. Certainly, we could eventually. They're both very talented tight ends. They have all the tools and assets. Henry reminds me of a Gronk. Jonnu, not as much as a Hernandez. Hernandez was more of kind of that. He was smaller type of build, more savvy, not as muscular. Smith and Henry, although Hernandez is good in open space and after the run, kind of like a Jonnu Smith. So you can kind of see the similarities. Smith a little bit bigger. But I think, you know, the two tight end system, they're going to be able to bring it back. We haven't seen this since the Hernandez and the Gronk, or the Gronk and the Martellus Bennett that they brought in 2016. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think Cam needs this. For a quarterback like him, you need good tight ends for him to work. With Olsen, it worked. You put him in a system last year, despite his mechanical flaws, which I think are unfixable for Cam at this point in his career. You need to get that tight end situation figured out. And they did it in 2 days. 2 days, they figured out the tight end position. And now they went from having one of the worst tight end, actually not one of the worst, the worst tight end situation in the league. I mean, you were starting Ryan Izzo, who they just traded to the Texans for a 7th-round pick. That's robbery. And I don't know how you can say that trading for a 7th-round pick is robbery, but when you have a guy like Ryan Izzo, if you watch Ryan Izzo, it's robbery. Trust me, a 7th-round pick is far more than what he is in value. I mean, the guy is horrible. Absolute garbage. Don't know how he's still in the NFL. Matt Lacoste, obviously, he didn't play last year, but he's absolute garbage as well. They had him in that room. It was just bad, 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 bad tight end room. Very bad tight end room. So they go from having the worst tight end room in the whole entire NFL to possibly now the best one. The best one. You have other tight end rooms in the league that could compete for this honor, but it's mostly just because they have one top tier tight end. I mean, the 49ers last year had Kittle, who was injured for most of the season, so couldn't maximize his potential. And then Jordan Reed. Very good tight end room. I'd put that up with the Henry and the Smith room. Now, Jordan Reed's not as good as he used to be. If he was Redskins Jordan Reed, prime Jordan Reed, that one blows Jonnu and Hunter Henry out of the water. But that's the one I'd put in contention with this. Off the top of my head, I can't think of another tight end room. Maybe Ertz and Goddard, which will be broken up. I can't think of another one that's as good as this. I mean, they went to go spend out the money. When you have the money to go make such a good room, you do it. And I think they couldn't have done any other move in this free agency that would elevate their receivers as much as this. And that's tough to say with tight ends, right? It's really tough to say with tight ends. But, you know, the wide receiver market was pretty good. It was a good wide receiver market. But the Giants went out and spent like $20 million for Kenny Galladay, right? I'd rather spend around $11 a year for Smith and Henry to have both of them instead of just one Kenny Galladay. That's me. Galladay also injury problems. But I think that was the best receiver move they could have possibly made, especially with the quarterback situation they have with a guy like Cam who needs tight ends. Running quarterbacks rely on tight ends a lot. Their tight ends and their check down running backs for ones that can't necessarily throw as much anymore. And that's clearly evident with Cam Newton not being able to put it downfield as good as he used to be. Clearly evident. Fun fact about Cam Newton. He's actually only had, I learned this just a few weeks ago. Cam Newton has had like one 4,000-yard season in his career. One 4,000. And I believe that was his MVP year. So I don't doubt Cam Newton's throwing ability back then because he was doing a lot of run plays, but he's not the best passer of all time. Even back then, he wasn't the best passer of all time. He had a good arm on him. They didn't utilize it, though. Certainly didn't. Anyways, back to the Patriots signing. I mean, the tight end's just great. I could rave about it all day. Now we get to the wide receivers that the Patriots signed. Kendrick Bourne, the wide receiver from the San Francisco 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo praised him as a guy who's always open, a guy always reliable. Smaller guy, 6'1". He's only 25. He's getting a 3-year, $22.5 million contract from the New England Patriots. This is a Belichick guy. This is a Belichick guy. The numbers from his career started off in 2017. He had 257. Then that steadily increased to 487 in 2018, declining to 358 in 2019. And then in 2020, having a pretty good year, 49 receptions for 667 yards and 2 touchdowns. Now, mind you, this is in a receiver room with Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel as well. Samuel a little bit banged up last year, so maybe not as much him. But these are solid numbers for a wide receiver 3. Now, with him coming into a wide receiver room that's been pretty damaged in New England, I think that Kendrick Bourne is going to have an elevated role. More of like a wide receiver 2, especially with Edelman getting older. His role is going to be declining. Bourne's going to come in and he's going to have an elevated role with guys like Jacoby Myers. Jacoby Myers is a guy who's going to stick around in this New England offense after having a good year last year, being a key part, kind of the only weapon that I think Cam trusted after Edelman got injured, because he would keep throwing to him. And Myers made plays. He catches well. He had all the trick plays with his arm, which is a really hard worker. Things that we didn't see initially in his rookie year. A guy who's better than N'Keal Harry. And now with Bourne getting signed, Harry, the room for him is falling. There's not a lot of room for him anymore. They signed Kendrick Bourne, as we know, and I think Bourne's a great, good for the overall health of this team. He's a fun character type of guy. Really just the Pats West videos, which is the group that Jarrett Stidham actually organized for the Patriots. And he brought over Kendrick Bourne, Matt Lacoste, who was there for some reason, Hunter Henry. He just kind of brought together all of the Jacoby Myers was there. All the wide receivers and everything to kind of get them familiar with the system. Cam Newton also showed up at that camp eventually. Good leadership from him. But constantly throughout those videos, you see Kendrick Bourne's enthusiasm, just his leadership. He wants to play for this team. He's a character. He was a character in San Francisco. All the fans loved him over there. And I think he's already loved by the Patriots Nation at this point. I love this guy. This guy is kind of the opposite of Juju Smith-Schuster. Now, I've criticized Juju Smith-Schuster for being too concerned with social media and everything, which I can see Bourne is into that as well. But it's what they do with it. Kendrick Bourne, hardworking guy, and I don't discount Juju's hard work either. But Kendrick Bourne, he's using social media in a way to highlight that he's a hard worker and he's going to do this and that. He's not highlighting his Twitch stream every 5 minutes, you know, he's not dancing on logos. He's respectful. He's a good guy. He's a locker room guy. He's not a locker room cancer, which I think is what Juju is, who infests his fellow receivers to do TikToks. Like Chase Claypool, we'll talk about him a little later and what he got into and how I think Juju influenced that a little bit. But he's more of the fun guy like Juju, but not in a negative way, that he's going to take everyone's mind off of football, but he's going to put everyone's mind on football. He's the fun guy that loves football. Football is his thing, his only thing, and he wants to work. He's just happy. And he's humbled. He's humbled. This is his first payday, big payday. He worked hard for it. And I think this guy's going to flourish in the Patriot system. I really think he will. Kind of, I can see him having a good relationship with Cam. They're kind of both the same, hardworking, but also fun-loving at the same time. Those type of guys. The other wide receiver that the Patriots also signed was Nelson Agholor. Now, Agholor, as we know, gets a lot of hate for his drops. Those declined a little bit. They declined a little bit. But after last season, before last season, he was signed by the Las Vegas Raiders and kind of had a career renaissance a little bit after a fall off in 2019 with the Eagles. For his third and fourth year in the league, 2017 and 2018 with the Eagles, he had 768 yards and 8 touchdowns in 2017, and then 736 yards in 2018 with 4 touchdowns. Then in 2019, had a bit of a fall off. Only 39 receptions for 363 yards. So he goes to the Raiders, right? This guy's only 27, by the way. Pretty long career for a guy who's only 27. So young. Very young guy who's had good production, as we see in 2018 and 17 with the Eagles. Did pretty good in the Super Bowl. But now in 2020 with the Raiders, all the Eagles fans that wanted him to get out because of his bad production, he showed them up, had 48 receptions for 896 yards and 8 touchdowns. Nearly 900-yard season. This guy is going to be a wide receiver 2 for the Patriots, not going to be a wide receiver 1. Kind of the role that Bourne has. But as Bourne is more of a middle of the field route type of guy, short routes, all that, he's going to make runs after the catch. Aguilar is more of a deep threat. And Cam has struggled with that, but he shined a little bit. You saw the Texans game, the Jahmyr Bird throw from Cam and all that. So he has the possibility. I think Cam is improving a little bit. He's working a little harder. I think he'll be better. It's hard to be worse from what he was last season. I don't think he's going to be as good. I think he will. Let me correct myself. I'm speaking fast. I think Cam will be better. I think he'll be good. Somewhat. I don't think he's going to be awful, but he's going to be better because, you know, it's tough to get worse. Anyways, Aguilar is going to make him a little bit better, give him a little more space there. Great deep threat, as we know, 896 last year, career year. A little bit of an overpay. They had him at about like 13 mil a year, 2 year, 26 million. So until he's 29, they're going to have him. An interesting signing, nonetheless. The value, you know, Corey Davis, I believe, got a little bit less than he got 3 years, 27 from the Jets. I like Nelson Aguilar. I'm not going to fight with the signing. They have to overpay a little bit, the Patriots do, because they're not Super Bowl contenders at this point. You know, they just came off a 7-9 season. The Belichick aspect's still there, but you also still need to pay money. That's reality. And, you know, if Corey Davis is going to go sign for that much money, how much is New England going to have to pay him to go get him, you know? But Aguilar, overall, good wide receiver. I'm happy that the Patriots got him. They're building up the room. You got Smith, Henry, Bourne, and Aguilar now. Four guys that are just really I wouldn't say consistent with Aguilar. But first three guys, really consistent, good attitudes in the locker room, want to win, and you're just rebuilding the wide receiver room in like 2 days, which is great. And for all the people that said that it was all the weapons for Cam, the weapons are the problem. Not Cam, not that he can't hit a running back wide open 2 feet from him, throws it at his feet into the dirt. It's not Cam's fault. It's the weapon's fault. Well, no more excuses for you anymore. Because Cam has weapons, and he has a lot of them. And he might have even more coming in the draft. With that 15th pick, they could go get a wide receiver like Rondale Moore, Elijah Moore, Rashad Bateman, Kadarius Toney, Terrence Marshall, someone like that. They could trade up to Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle. It's fully possible. So he's going to – Kyle Pitts even maybe, and probably a little bit out of reach there, but nonetheless, he's viewed as more a weapon than a tight end, so he could fit in here somewhere. There's no more excuses for you. At all. No more excuses. And I'm willing to ride this season out with Cam with these weapons. I'm willing to do it. I'm not thrilled. I'd like the Patriots to go get someone else because I don't think Cam is going to get you much anywhere. And I don't want to waste a year on those contracts, you know? You have the assets to go get a quarterback right now. Jimmy Garoppolo is on the table after a trade that we'll talk about a little bit later. You got guys like Alex Smith, who's a game manager, but you know he can be consistent. Cam's sort of an unknown. High risk, high reward is what we'd call that. But the opportunity is there. They could go draft someone too if they wanted to. But the opportunity is there. Now to finish that up, the Patriots also went and got pass rusher from the Ravens, Matt Judon, one of the best pass rushers, edge rushers in this whole entire free agency. I was surprised that he wasn't even on the table for the Patriots. I didn't expect it. When it popped up on my phone, I was like, okay. Well, Bill's out here, and he's getting Pro Bowl-level guys. I mean, Matt Judon is an animal off the edge. Great player for the Ravens, one of their cornerstones on defense. It's going to be tough for the Ravens to replace that, especially after losing Yannick Ngakoue, too, on the other side. So Judon signed a four-year, $56 million contract. Judon a little bit older. I believe he just hit 30. But a good outside linebacker, edge type, who's going to get to the passer, improving a defense that took a step back a little bit last year and can kind of mentor a Josh Uche, a similar type of player with a similar skill set. And for me, Jennings can give them a little bit of room because you could see that they struggled a little bit last year, just overall trying to get up to speed so fast. Also Chase Winovich, who I think will still be a starter out there. But you got a nice little edge kind of rotation with the younger guys and now older guys. Also, Kyle Van Noy came back on a two-year deal, who had one of his best seasons last year, but was cut because he was a cap casualty, basically, for the Dolphins. Now you got him on a nice cheap deal, and you got Judon coming off of one side, and then Van Noy coming off the other. So this defense being rebuilt again in pretty much one day. And then we also had the signings of Henry Anderson from the Jets, very cheap guy that Belichick's wanted for a while, a defensive lineman interior. He was one of the brighter spots in the Jets defense, which is, I mean, not hard to say, but because there isn't much on that Jets defense. But a good impact player. Also, Devon Godshaw from the Dolphins, a nice interior player. Re-signed Lawrence Guy as well, so that interior defensive line improved. Despite losing Adam Butler, who I love Adam Butler. I'm sad to see him go, but he got a nice little payday from Miami. And then improving the secondary was Jalen Mills from the Eagles. The guy with the green hair. If you don't know him by the name, you'll probably know him by that. A nice little player from the Eagles. Originally more of a cornerback, but now last year shifted to more of a safety role for the Eagles. He's actually pretty good. In 2017 was probably his best year. Three interceptions that Super Bowl year. It was a good kind of cornerstone of that Eagles defense and secondary. That was a very good, no, I wouldn't say very good. I mean, they struggled in that Super Bowl, but got bailed out because the Patriots sat Malcolm Butler and let Eric Rowe get destroyed. But anyways, Mills is going to add to a secondary that already has guys like Adrian Phillips, Kyle Duggar, who's more of a guy who plays in the box, more of a linebacker slash safety type guy. Mills more of just a pure safety and corner. Shift them in between. Patriots love versatile players. I'm happy about this one. Consistent. Good in the secondary. 6 foot. Just overall pretty good player in Jalen Mills. Only 4 years, $24 million. That's a $6 million a year contract. It's cheap. They're not losing anything here if he doesn't play well. Because you still got guys like Phillips, McCourty, Duggar to bail you out. It's just the safety group, like the tight end group, is now pretty good, despite the loss of Patrick Chung, who was more of a tackler, not coverage type of guy. Phillips, more of a hard-hitting type of guy, too. Mills is going to bring in now the coverage skills that McCourty has and all that. But overall, pretty good free agency from the Patriots. We just spent 30 minutes talking about that. We're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to go on to the rest of the NFL's free agency. That wasn't nearly as entertaining as the Patriots, but surely was just free agency frenzy as always. And we're back to talk about some more free agency. So let's get straight back into it with the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, going into free agency, the Kansas City Chiefs, not a lot of money to spend, but they did free up some cap space somehow, some way with that big Mahomes contract that I've said for ages. Eventually, the window, you know, is only like 3 years at this point. I've said this on previous podcasts a while ago. But the window is only 3 years because that huge Mahomes contract is going to take up so much cap space. We saw this with the Russell Wilson contract, which has come into play the past few years, you know, not winning a Super Bowl since the very first one, not getting to one since XLIX. And the offensive line struggles that have plagued them because they haven't been able to draft, which has been a big problem, and they can't go out and spend on offensive linemen because of cap problems. So we've seen that, and we're starting to see that with the Kansas City Chiefs, but they found a way around it somehow, some way. They're, you know, teams getting very smart with the cap nowadays, like with the Saints having to cut massacre everyone, but even still having to sign Taysom Hill to that weird contract that freed up cap space, and then it all voids and all this cap loopholes. The cap is starting to not as matter as much as it used to. I still think it's a player, but not as much. I still think the Chiefs are going to run into some trouble, and we're starting to see this. It's just going to make their jobs harder. Maybe not as, it won't have as big of an impact, but certainly the Chiefs are going to front office is going to have to work a lot harder. And we saw this. They cut offensive tackles Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz, two of their better offensive linemen, and still offensive line struggles for them. So they cut basically their best O-linemen. And everybody at this point, including me, had no clue what they were doing. We thought maybe they were going to try to get wide receivers, and they were just being stupid and disregarding their offensive line, trying to fill in positions that they already have, and really just setting themselves up for failure. But they went out and signed offensive guard Joe Tooney from the New England Patriots, an all-pro level offensive guard that the Patriots had as an expendable guy because of Michael Owenu and Isaiah Wynn hitting their stride last year and really just having the flexibility to do whatever they want with the offensive line. Chiefs, not as much. They went out and signed Tooney to a five-year, $80 million contract. No clue have they had that much money to go and spend on that, but they trade in the two tackles for a guard. And then they went out and got unretired guard Kyle Long, formerly of the Chicago Bears, who, when he was in the league last, very good player, Kyle Long. A very good offensive guard. Not super, super, super good, but a consistent type of guy. So if he can return to his form, they got two pretty good guards in there. Tackle is still a situation they got to figure out. But they seem to be valuing the guards a little bit more than the tackles. Also, the tackle market wasn't necessarily as strong as the guard market this year. Guards flying off the boards. The tackles in the draft, though, plentiful. Plentiful with Cosme, Darisaw, Slater, Sewell, Leatherwood, Walker Little from Stanford, who I'm not as high on. But those type of guys that they could possibly go and try to get. But overall, Chiefs moves here, I thought, were pretty good. They need to figure the tackle thing out. But then again, that 32nd overall pick, you can get a good tackle there in the draft and start to rebuild it over time. Now, I don't think the Chiefs are going to fall off or anything because of their offensive line. I think they'll be perfectly fine and be one of the best teams, if not the best, in the AFC next year. But over time, things deteriorate. We saw this with the Seahawks. I'd just watch out for that. Then we had Corey Davis of the Tennessee Titans. He went out and signed with the New York Jets for on a three-year, $37.5 million contract. The Jets also went out and signed Carl Lawson, the defensive end for the Cincinnati Bengals, to a three-year, $45 million contract. The Davis signing I like. Davis, never really a number one, had A.J. Brown in front of him. Sad that the Titans and him couldn't work it out. They had a good thing going there. Titans also kind of massacring the roster a little bit to get Bud Dupree in there for a big contract, which I didn't love. But They gave up a lot, and Corey Davis was one of the casualties there. He went to go sign with the Jets. Davis is going to be a nice little foil to Jamison Crowder. It will be pretty good over there, I think, working with the young guys like Denzel Mims and Braxton Berrios, working with them. Jets building a nice little wide receiver group for Zach Wilson, presumably, to throw to him or Sam Darnold if they actually keep Sam Darnold, which I think is far out of the realm of possibility at this point, despite them. If you didn't see this yesterday, Adam Schefter tweeted out a photo of the season ticket page or something that still had Sam Darnold just plastered all over it for 2021. I think that doesn't mean anything at all, as I think anybody would take that as not meaning anything at all, but we'll see there. Carl Lawson, that signing, I don't like as much. They're paying a lot of money for Lawson, who is a good player. He's only 25, a young guy, but I don't like it too much. Average production, just mainly a pass rusher. Doesn't bring really anything else to the table. 8.5 sacks his rookie year. Fell off then and had 1. Then 5 in 2019. And last year had 5.5 sacks. A consistent pass rusher, but nothing really worth that $45 million on a 3-year contract that they paid him. I think it's a little bit of overpay. Yeah, the Jets have to do that because of the Jets. But I think you could get something in the draft with that 23rd pick instead. That could save you a lot of money for 4 years instead of going out and getting a guy like Carl Lawson. Like a Jason Oweh or Greg Rousseau or Jalen Phillips or something like that. I think that would be a better move than spending $45 million on Carl Lawson, but you know, the Jets disagree. We'll see how it works out. He's not going to be bad for them. He's not going to be bad unless he just takes the money and gives up, which I don't think he will. I don't love it though. I don't love the signing. I think I'm in the minority of that. You know, I haven't really looked at to how people have received the Carl Lawson signing because it's more of a minor thing. Not many people are talking about Carl Lawson, but I don't love it. It's not Justin Coleman to the Lions bad, which was probably the worst signing I've ever seen in my life a couple of years ago. When he got signed to the Lions, we had a field day with that. But Carl Lawson, decent player, a little too much. Washington football team, they came out and started signing players. They signed Ryan Fitzmagic Fitzpatrick to a 1-year deal. He's going to quarterback them, it seems. Be the kind of mentor to a rookie quarterback if they decide to bring that someone in to do that next year. Or he will be the leader of this team. I think he will probably start next year for them. Taylor Heinicke also in there. I want to see a little bit more of Taylor Heinicke, but Fitzpatrick, I think, can actually lead this team to a pretty decent record. Football team has a good surrounding group around them right now. With newly signed Curtis Samuel, who I loved. I wish the Pats went and got him. They didn't, but Curtis Samuel, great player. He's teaming up with his former teammate, Terry McLaurin, at Ohio State. Very good wide receivers there. You got Antonio Gibson out of the backfield as well. Great defense, which they also added William Jackson, a good cornerback from Cincinnati. Cincinnati losing some defensive pieces, but steadily increasing their offensive line. So football team, pretty good. Increased their defense with William Jackson in the secondary, which is something they needed. They pretty much already have the defensive line fully covered with Chase Young, Montez Sweat, guys like that, Jonathan Allen. Daron Payne, I believe, is still over there. So pretty good defensive line. Linebackers are covered. What you need a corner. So you go get William Jackson, who was number one over there in Cincinnati. Very, very good for them. Fitzpatrick's going to be consistent. Still got a lot in the tank. And I think he can have a pretty good season with the football team. I like Washington as the favorite in the NFC East for next season. Dallas has all that talent, but I can't trust Mike McCarthy. He's an absolute dumpster fire, said here before. Carried by talent in 2010 with the Packers. That was not him at all. And he showed his true colors last year, just absolutely sucking it up. Even when Dak was out there and Ezekiel Elliott struggling again with the offensive line that's now suddenly falling apart a little bit with the departures of guys like Travis Frederick. So they're showing their true colors, talented offense, but you need good coaching. And that's been so, so important with the Cowboys. Because they had Jason Garrett, grew a lot of talent, couldn't get anywhere. More than Mike McCarthy will ever get them, but nonetheless. Now they bring in Mike McCarthy, who's a downgrade, and they're doing horrible. I still think they should have went and got Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma. They should have done that a long time ago, but they never have. The Eagles, Jalen Hurts, I think, will do well, but still, the wide receiver thing is a problem, and I don't know if they can fix that so fast. And I think football team, Rivera, good coaching, good defense. The offense is good now. They just have something there that other teams in that division, they don't have. Simply don't have it. And the Giants don't have a quarterback. Daniel Jones, I don't think he's going to pan out this year. He hasn't panned out in the past few years, and I don't think he's going to change this year. You know, I've taken back the Josh Allen take, and that's really the only quarterback take that I've had to take back. And that was a lot of people's take, too. But Jones just doesn't have the athletic ability, the raw talent that Josh Allen had coming out. And I don't think he has the coaching either. He has Joe Judge, who was a special teams coordinator before he got the head coaching job. He's not an offensive mastermind. He doesn't have the level of coaching and development that Daboll and McDermott have. He doesn't have that. So and Jason Garrett's the offensive coordinator. I don't see him developing Daniel Jones any farther. And the Giants are going to have to. This is just like it is for Cam. You can't use a weapon excuse for Daniel Jones anymore because he just got Kenny Galladay. He has Sterling Shepard too. And I mean, Evan Ingram, Saquon's coming back. I mean, he's going to have a lot of weapons too and a good defense. Kind of what WFT has. It's just I think WFT's quarterback situation, as unstable as it is more stable than what the Giants have. Not sad to say, but I just don't see the Giants going anywhere. They have a talented roster, but the quarterback's not there, and that's a problem. Shaquille Griffin, the Seahawks cornerback, good player, not super efficient, but a good corner overall. For the Seahawks, for a struggling defense. The Seahawks lose him, surprisingly. Really, the only player in their secondary now that's of note is Jamal Adams, whose coverage has come into question. And Griffin goes to the Jaguars on a three-year, $44.5 million deal. Jaguars adding to C.J. Henderson in the secondary. So good for them. They're starting to build it up. Urban Meyer making minor signings. This was his big one. Jaguars starting to look good. Seahawks falling down even further. They added to their offensive line with Gabe Jackson, which is the main thing they needed to address. So good for them for addressing that. But also their defense is falling apart, and they're letting that happen. So, again, the cap thing is a problem for them. Shaq Griffin signing by the Jaguars shows that wholeheartedly. The Saints are reportedly eyeing Richard Sherman. This is a big thing. Marshawn Lattimore just got into trouble with the law, so makes sense. If they have the cap room to go get Sherman, I think it makes a lot of sense. The Saints are going to fall off this year with Breeze officially retiring. I don't think they're going to go much of anywhere unless Jameis Winston turns into like a god of a quarterback, which I don't think is going to happen. He'll be better. He'll improve. Not gonna do much. They just lost Emmanuel Sanders, Jared Cook. They lost a lot of weapons. Had to cut a lot of players. So I don't see the additions outweighing the massive losses that they have. And still dealing with the cap is pretty tough for them. So Sherm, I would probably go somewhere else. But, you know, if you can get a nice little payday or something, it could be worth it. You're fighting for a playoff spot still, I think, there, but not really going anywhere. Now into the juicy stuff. The Texans signed quarterback Tyrod Taylor, presumably to be their starting quarterback now that Deshaun Watson, they're finally starting to give in to those trade rumors. And I think this is a complete sign that Watson is gone. But those rumors hit a wall when Deshaun Watson, a little man named Tony Busby, appeared. Now, for your background context of this situation, Tony Busby, he's a lawyer from Texas, Houston. In 2019, he ran for mayor of Houston, Texas, and he lost. So, you know, he got some money on him for sure and has a good history as a lawyer. But what he did was accuse Deshaun Watson basically of sexual assault. And this case, really, we know barely anything about it. Watson, over the past 3 weeks, has had about like 21 accusers. Now, Watson on the field and outside of the field, known as a great guy in the Houston community. Everyone's still loving him despite wanting out, really, until this happens. And it's a little sketchy, and a lot of people are doubting Busby. Despite how much accusers have come out, there's now 18 massage... Well, the background thing is that they're accusing him of sexual assault in regards to massage therapists and all of this, and just acting very inappropriate in front of them. In that, but 18 of massage therapists have just recently come out and said that he's a perfect person. So we got 21 versus 18. We don't know who's telling the truth at this point. And this is holding Deshaun's trade back a while. I mean, Deshaun's not going to get traded anymore for a long, 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 long time with this. There's reports that people inside the NFL think this is total bull and that Watson is a fine person. I tend to lean towards that, but I can't make really any judgment on this because, I mean, we haven't had any trial or any evidence pushed forward. I mean, there's been no conclusion to this. A very sensitive subject here. So I don't want to, you know, say anything too harsh. But this Busby guy, very suspect. Some background information on him. In 2012, he put up billboards. Not 2012, 2014. Put up billboards in Houston, Texas for the Texans to draft Johnny Manziel. Spent a lot of money. Billboards cost a lot of money. Billboards cost a lot of money. He went on in his statement to say that he wasn't a big football fan, didn't really care about the Texans. He cares about the Texans, or at least 6 years ago, he definitely did. To be spending that much money to keep Johnny football in Texas. He also lives across the street from Texans owner Cal McNair. And we know that the relationship between Cal McNair and Tony Busby isn't amazing. It's not very good. But we'll see how this plays out. Busby's statement, his first post that came out on Instagram, a little unusual for a lawyer to be posting on Instagram. His basically just publicly saying he's accusing Deshaun Watson of this. But I'll read this out for you. Tony said, "I'm extremely proud to represent those who have no perceived power against those who have perceived," all caps, "power. Things are changing in this country, in this great state," this is Texas, "and in this great city," Houston. "And I feel like it's for the better for all of us. Today we filed suit against Deshaun Watson. Too many times women have put up with behavior that we all know no one should put up with. Should we make excuses for the famous or those who hold special positions or quarterbacks on a local professional football team? I don't think so. All people are equal and all deserve dignity and respect. My dad was a butcher. My mother drove my school bus and worked in the snack bar. Knowing what I now know, my mama had more dignity in her pinky finger than most executives or coaches or politicians or famous athletes have in their whole bodies. This case we just filed against Watson isn't about money. Although he asked for a bailout. It's about dignity and stopping behavior that should be stopped. Now, stay tuned for details. Let me say this. I'm a Marine. I'm not easily intimidated. If you have info or have been a part of this, contact my office, txattorneys.com. So that was his statement. Basically, initially, it's great timing, by the way, at the start of free agency. But really, we don't know. The Houston police have said that there's no evidence has been brought forward for this case. We don't know. It's a total unknown. I'm going to treat it as a total unknown. I really don't know at this point. Busby went on to pretty much act pretty childish in the comment section of his post. He's turned off comments, people ridiculing him, which I think isn't really totally deserved. I mean, we don't know the details of this case. We don't know really what happened, and we shouldn't make assumptions until this case is fully investigated and concluded. So hopefully this is figured out. Busby, not the most likable person ever, but neither is Deshaun Watson. I hope Watson didn't do any of this, of course. I really hope he didn't. He has a talented career. He's been a great guy up to this point. And for something like this to ruin his career would be horrible. And for anything to happen to any of the women that put it forward is horrible. But we'll see how this turns out. Do I think anything will really come of it? I don't think so. But we'll ultimately see. Now let's go on to some depressing news for Bears fans. Bears, they signed Andy Dalton and pretty much concluded that this guy is going to be their starting quarterback of the future. Very concerning for them. Mitch Trubisky went on to sign with the Buffalo Bills. I think people would much rather bring back Mitch than have Andy Dalton. Dalton's not going to get the Bears anywhere. I mean, virtually the same as Mitch Trubisky, just older and not as much potential anymore. Very sad day for Bears fans. They could go draft someone, but at 20, it doesn't look like they're going to be able to get anything there, especially with Mac Jones now sliding kind of into that area of the top 10. Mac Jones sliding in there now. His stock is rising monumentally. So he was once looked at possibly a guy that could slide down to the WFT or he could slide down to the Bears. But I don't see that really happening anymore. Dalton starting quarterback, Bears, third, fourth in their division. That defense still is going to carry him a little bit. Dalton still shows some flashes, but I don't see anything really there. Matt Nagy, he's probably going to be fired after this season. Wishing the best of luck, but we'll see there. Now to Juju Smith-Schuster, who we know, I love Juju Smith-Schuster, and so does everybody else who's normally on this podcast. Being sarcastic, of course, Juju Smith-Schuster, hate's a strong word, but it's something I'd use for him. Now, Juju is a good guy in the community, does a lot for charities and stuff like that. Fun guy, but overall, dancing on the logos rubbed me the wrong way. Toying with his free agency like it's a game. Just not being professional at all. And he went and he pretty much hinted all over the place on his Twitch streams and his Instagram and everything. He basically said, okay, I'm going to go sign elsewhere from the Steelers. Just toying with Steelers fans' hearts. And then he eventually re-signs with the Steelers for $8 million. Now, this was questionable. I didn't even think the Steelers would want Juju back. Him and Mike Tomlin seemed to have a bit of a fractured relationship, which I think makes sense. Tomlin seems like the sane one in the room. Juju goes on to sign with the Steelers. He reportedly had offers from the Chiefs for an $11 million deal. And people said this didn't really make sense because Juju's losing $3 million. I think it sort of makes sense for Juju, not for the Steelers. Steelers have James Washington. They got Claypool. They can draft wide receivers very easily. I don't think they had to pay him $8 million for this 1 year, but they did it anyways. They're not going anywhere this year, so it is what it is. But Juju's going to have more of a wide receiver one role with the Steelers than with the Chiefs. He'd be kind of pushed to the side with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce as the main pass catchers, as always, just being a side weapon. So this signing makes sense for him. It kind of sets up maybe a bigger future payday next year than this year, going to the Chiefs, not having as good of a year. I don't think Juju's going to have a great year this year either, but it's better than what he would have got elsewhere, most likely, in referring to next year, obviously. Now, he could have possibly gone to the Chargers. That was a big rumor. Chargers and the Raiders, which I think wanted to sign him to a multi-year deal. That wasn't reported. It was more of just the Chiefs on a one-year contract. Now, if the rumors were true and Juju had multi-year offers from the Chargers for presumably $10 million a year, because that seems to be the market value for most of them, of course I would have taken that. I don't think Juju's ever going to get to the level that Galladay gets, where he gets $20 million a year. He's not that type of wide receiver. He's more of a wide receiver two. He's not that wide receiver one type of guy. He's a playmaker, yes, but he's not going to be the leader of the wide receiver core. So if he had a multi-year secured deal with like the Chargers or the Raiders, they were going to give him good money, I would have went with that. But he went with the Steelers. If it was just the Steelers and the Chiefs and those offers, it makes sense. And I think Juju was actually smart here. Steelers, obviously not. But we'll see with this. Juju, you know, never really liked him. He kind of made I'm on a little bit of the minority in thinking that this is a good move by Juju, but we'll see eventually how this plays out. And then on to his teammate Chase Claypool, who just gets more and more like Juju, it seems like every single week, and deteriorates and falls down. He was so likable at the start of the season, and then just day by day, fell farther and farther down. This was a thing that kind of got downplayed by the media a little bit. It was up for one day, and then everybody just kind of ignored it. Chase Claypool got into a bar fight, if you didn't see the video. Claypool was beating someone down. We don't really know how the bar fight started, but kind of a no-class move by him, kicking someone while they were down, pretty much. It was over, and he just goes in and kicks them. You know, showing no class, just like Juju. Taking Juju's dancing on logos, but now into more of a serious thing, kicking someone while they're down. Not a good look for the Steelers wide receivers. Not a good look for Chase Claypool. Juju and Chase Claypool are probably the most unlikable wide receiver room in the whole entire NFL. The 10-year-olds on social media love these guys. Anybody who watches football, you know, fun-loving players are great. Chad Ochocinco was great. Terrell Owens, they were great. But now these new age players that are all social media and just only care about that and don't care about the football, Juju and Chase Claypool. And any real football fan, I think, has to have some disrespect for these guys at this point. And they need to get their stuff together. They really need to get their stuff together. Claypool still has the room to do that. I think he's getting a lot of influence from Juju. But, you know, we'll see how this one plays out. Juju and Claypool, they disgust me at this point, man. They disgust me at this point. The Steelers aren't going anywhere this year anyways, so they'll probably get what they deserve. But we will see. We're going to take a really quick break, and we'll be back with the big draft trades and the NBA. And we're on to the Dolphins and 49ers trade. So the Dolphins this week traded the third overall pick in the NFL draft for the 49ers 12th overall pick, their first round pick in 2022, and their third in 2022, and their first round pick in 2023. So the Fins get an absolute haul here to go back to 12. 49ers up to 3. This means that the Niners are going to take a quarterback. As I said earlier in the podcast, there was rumors that the 49ers were actually going to go and draft Mac Jones, who had a bad pro day this week. Justin Fields, who was the guy that everybody was thinking, including me, and I think should be the pick there for the 49ers, had a great pro day. And until the Mac Jones rumors and reports came out, which people are saying is a smokescreen, but why would they need a smokescreen? Because we already know pretty much that Wilson and Lawrence are going to be the top two picks. There's no threats in front of them. Why do they need a smokescreen to who they're picking? They don't. So I think this Mac Jones rumor might actually have some actual weight in there. The Dolphins then actually went and traded with the Eagles to get up back to number 6 to presumably take another wide receiver. They got Will Fuller in free agency, and they already have Devontae Parker. So pretty good weapons there for Tua. But trading back to 6, or up to 6 with the Eagles, they got number 6 and 156, and they traded 12, a first in 2022, and 132. So not giving up a lot there. Dolphins have a pile of picks from the Tunzel trade and these transactions. And they still got number 6, only moving down 3 spots. Got absolute haul. Eagles trading back to 12. They could still get a wide receiver, which they desperately need. But, you know, they got a first in 2022. They could possibly have 3 first-round picks in 2022 if the Wentz deal pans out for the Colts. Because if the Colts make the playoffs, I believe the second-round pick that was sent to the Eagles through that trade will turn into a first-round pick. So they'll have 3 firsts now. And they'll basically have the ammo to do whatever they want in that draft. So if Jalen Hurts doesn't pan out, they can draft whatever quarterback they want next year. Spencer Rattler, Sam Howell, who I think is going to be the best quarterback in that draft next year. Absolutely insane from North Carolina. So Eagles have ammunition to move wherever they want next year. So overall, I think that's a good trade. You know, if they like next year's products better than this one, which, and you know, they can get some quality. It's like 12 isn't 26 or something. There's plenty of good players left on the board at number 12. 12 is still a very good pick, and they got a lot of ammo. So I don't dislike the Eagles trade as much, although Jamar Chase could have been in play there, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith could still be in play at 12, I think. I don't think Devontae Smith is necessarily going to be top 10, but we'll see there. 49ers, you know, I wish they were going to stick with Garoppolo maybe for more of the long term, but I understand that the injury concerns are pushing them over a little bit, and I think they might be giving up a little too much. I mean, the 49ers, you know, going for an unproven rookie quarterback, despite this class being very, very good. If they go with Mac Jones, I think this is a wasted trade, completely wasted. If they go with Justin Fields, I think Fields can work very well in the 49ers system. I think that's one of the teams that has good coaching with Shanahan and has a good core already around him. And that kind of gets rid of my Ohio State. Really, the only concern I have with Justin Fields is Ohio State system. And I think with good coaching, that's irrelevant. And, you know, you just go with him. And I think that's one of the situations you go with him. Mac Jones is a smart guy, but physical tools aren't there and stuff. It's kind of like a Garoppolo. But honestly, I think Garoppolo brings more to the table than Mac Jones does. So if they go and draft Mac Jones, it's a waste of a trade immediately. I'm just hammering that point in right now. If they draft Mac Jones at number 3, waste of a trade. Just complete waste. And the 49ers will be, I tweeted this out. If they select Mac Jones at number 3, John Lynch should never work in the NFL again. I mean, it won't be good at all if they do that. So now that we're done with NFL, that was a very long NFL section. We're into the NBA trade deadline. Prior to the trade deadline, the Hawks asked for Jaylen Brown in their talks for John Collins. Now, this is complete and utter lunacy. The Hawks know they're not going to get Jaylen Brown. They know that. They knew they weren't going to get him. But they weren't able to move John Collins, who it looks like they were going to move anyways. So that's kind of a letdown for them. They could have got someone like Robert Williams from the Celtics, who has been pretty good. But they knew they weren't going to get Jaylen Brown. They didn't move John Collins. Collins will probably walk in free agency now. So not a good look for the Hawks front office. And the Celtics front office didn't really do much either, but more than they actually used to. Nikola Vucevic, who was very underrated lately, I mean, he's been a pretty good player for the Orlando Magic over the years. Never really got the recognition until recently. This year, he's been putting up 22 points a game and 9.3 rebounds a game, as well as 0.7 blocks. So a good big man in the middle, 20-plus points a game, an all-star. As we know, he was traded to the Bulls for Wendell Carter, Otto Porter, and 2 first-round picks. So the Magic, who aren't really going anywhere at this point, hitting the reset button, which is smart because, you know, Vucevic is a great player, but they weren't going to get the pieces to build around him and play in this NBA that's so super team filled at this point. They weren't going to get that. So getting Wendell Carter, who's hasn't really lived up to the hype, but a young center is good. They also got 2 first-round picks from the Bulls and Otto Porter, which I believe is going to be a buyout, but I'm not completely sure. So a nice young haul with Wendell Carter and the 2 first-round picks. Vucevic to the Bulls kind of makes sense. The Bulls are trying to build themselves up and get to that winning point a little bit sooner. I think overall, Vucevic will probably fit into their plans, but the Magic are hitting the reset button, which is smart. I agree with the Magic hitting the reset button. Evan Fournier, he was traded to the Celtics for 2 second-round picks, basically nothing. This, I think, I would think Fournier would demand more of a market because, you know, he's a 20-point-per-game scorer off the bench. Just a spot-up shooter. Has been playing horrible for the Celtics, actually. But I'm sure he'll turn it up. He's been reliable his whole entire career until suddenly he gets on the Celtics. But that's only in 2-3 games. So, you know, still room for improvement there. I would have liked to see at least a protected first-round pick for Fournier, but I guess I'm not getting that. So if the market was really that low, you know, he's going into a contract year, so it makes sense to get rid of him for anything you can get. So Celtics, good trade for them. Just pretty much getting a spot-up shooter, which they needed off the bench. They desperately needed something off the bench. So they get Fournier for virtually nothing. Good deal for Danny. And then the Magic reset button, as I said earlier, getting 2 second-round picks, pretty good. Aaron Gordon, he got traded to the Nuggets. Celtics were also involved with Gordon, but ultimately didn't get him. And I'm happy because this package for him seems like a little bit of overkill. Nuggets sent Gary Harris, RJ Hampton, who was a first-round pick this year, and a first-round pick. Now, Aaron Gordon, I think, was kind of overvalued. Honestly, this trade deadline. 14.6 points per game, pretty good averages. 37.5 percentage from 3 and 6.6 rebounds per game. A decent defensive player, but nothing too special. Brings a little bit to a Nuggets team that needs some extra pieces to get them over the hump. So it makes sense for them, but too much for Aaron Gordon, I think. I think we've already kind of seen Aaron Gordon's ceiling. He's been in the league for a long time. He's only 25, yes, but I don't think there's so much room for improvement for him. I just don't see the value. I'm happy the Celtics didn't go after him or any of the other teams really that wanted him, so we'll see what happens there. Not too high on Aaron Gordon. Victor Oladipo, he got traded from the Houston Rockets after having to play there with virtually no one for a long time for Avery Bradley, Kelly Olynyk in a draft swap. So getting a shooting guard who's very good for virtually nothing, trading two bench pieces that weren't going to do much for them anyways, and a draft swap, which won't matter in the long run. Pat Riley, still good. So good with his trades. And, you know, getting a guy who can play with Tyler Hero. You don't have to rely too much on Tyler anymore. You got Depot there. Butler, Depot, Hero, Bam. And very nice core. They're trying to make another run, and I certainly think they can as well. The Cavs bought out Andre Drummond, as we expected, and Drummond went on to sign with the Los Angeles Lakers. And another buyout happened, which was LaMarcus Aldridge getting bought out by the Spurs, and he went to the Nets. So people are starting to bring out the problem that buyouts are causing super teams, and they can just go wherever. Like Blake Griffin got bought out and went to the Nets, and now Aldridge getting bought out and going to the Nets. But I kind of agree with the counter argument that, yes, I don't like the buyouts, but the teams and the players are agreeing on this, and they're letting it happen instead of just trading them. So, you know, we can't really complain. Other teams can't really complain about this. I think it's bad for the game, but other teams can't complain about it if they're willingly doing it to themselves. So they either need to stop the behavior or, you know, just deal with it at this point. I don't love it. I think it's bad for the game, but it is what it is at this point. The Nets really stacked. If they don't win the NBA Finals, there's a problem there. And I think the only reason they wouldn't is because the toxicity in the locker room with all those people. And I don't think there's that big of a problem over there at this point. It seems like they're gelling well because they're playing well. So we'll see in the long run. But that's it for Sports Report Podcast, episode 36. Only a little bit of basketball there. A lot of football there. Hope you enjoyed that. My new scouting show will be having a few episodes dropping this week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Follow us on Twitter at SportsReportPo1. Follow us on Instagram at SportsReportPodcast. Follow me on Twitter at BillySRP for all that. Subscribe to our YouTube. That's been going really well. Some new clips will be coming up, obviously, from this podcast and from my new scouting show that you'll see when that comes out when I post it on Instagram. We're going to have a few episodes. Our first five, Trey Lance. We're doing Shakur Brown from Michigan State, Davis Mills, other guys. It's short form scouting, kind of just analysis that you can digest pretty easily. We're thinking between 10 and 20 minute episodes. So those will be in the works coming out just shortly after this, probably a day after this is dropped. So yeah, guys, thank you for everything. We couldn't have done this without you. Happy Easter, which is coming up. And we'll see you next week. Hopefully Aiden Alejandro will be here. Thank you guys so much, and bye.